Podcasting from a secret location under the mats. This is the Lessons from the Dojang Podcast, a podcast that literally has nothing to do with martial arts, but instead, we discuss the biggest news stories of the week. Kind of makes you wonder how we came up with the name, doesn't it? Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and attorney Frank Natal.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your midweek lesson, Lessons from the Dojang for this Wednesday, the 15th, 2019. I am your co-host, Master Patsy Zarilla. With me, as always, my dear friend and our other co-host and the best attorney that I know, Frank Natal. How are you doing today, Frank?
I'm well, Master Patsy. Thank you for that introduction, and hello to everybody listening.
We have some... Boy, I tell you, we got some stuff going on today that kind of defies logic sometimes whenever you think about it, doesn't it? A lot of stuff that's been happening, and I really want to take a moment, and maybe, you know, this entire podcast, we'll see how it goes. But through the course of our time together on Wednesdays and my time that I spend on Sundays with Master Grant and even when the three of us are on, Fox News keeps coming up over and over and over again. We keep talking about them. And I thought it'd be a good idea to maybe focus a little bit more on what's going on over there. And I know you have some thoughts about what's been going on. There's some subjects you want to hit on. So why don't you take the lead on this and see what we can do?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've noticed that, you know, more and more ever since Shepard Smith and, you know, a couple other of the hosts that have been on some shows there kind of questioned and directly contradicted what President Trump has been saying. There's been more and more kind of opposing view stuff that's been out there. And one is Judge Napolitano. I've noticed he has the judge's chambers piece that he does. I think he does it on YouTube and on Fox. And, you know, he's been a very conservative voice through the last, you know, 4 or 5 years that I remember being on TV. But right now he's coming out swinging pretty hard about obstruction of justice and how Barr has, you know, misled the Congress and that the report doesn't say what Barr purports it to say and that Trump engaged in a pattern of obstruction of justice. And, you know, he caught the ire of Trump on this, and it was interesting to me that Fox is allowing this to be promoted through its station. And, you know, pair that with some other things that I think you want to talk about. And let's talk about how that all dovetails. What have you seen out of Fox, and what have you guys been talking about?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The things that seem to grab us, and it seems like it grabs you and me both, and I'm not so sure if it's just, you know, us, like being you and me in particular. But whenever you have something that is so diametrically opposite of you and your viewpoint and your thought pattern and everything else, in martial arts terms, and everybody's heard this saying, it's called the yin and the yang, okay? Or yin yang, or whatever you want to call it. It's the idea that in order for the world and the universe to continue to exist, there has to be an equal balance of one side and the other, an equal balance of light and dark, for just so people can visualize it, an equal balance of good and bad and things like that. You know, just whichever you can wrap your head around to make it so you can understand it. And you've always seen, you know, the yin and yang symbol. I'm sure everybody has seen it. It's kind of difficult to describe, but once you see it, you kind of know what it is. You may not understand the reasoning behind it, but basically for the world and the universe to exist, you need an equal balance. That's the theory. That's the yin-yang principle. So if those of us on the left, the MSNBCs of the world, will say, okay, again, I'm trying to do something so people can visualize and try to understand what I'm saying. The other side of that, the yang side of that, would be Fox News. And so you have a a natural ability or just a natural curiosity to focus on that thing which is the total opposite of you. Okay, that's the thing that grabs your attention the most. Not the things that are sort of opposite view or the things that you may find some common ground with, but you don't necessarily agree completely. That's nice to, whenever you find people like that, you can sit around and drink and have a discussion. But you don't get a really big, strong emotional response to that, or you don't have an emotional connection to it like you do with something that is completely and totally the opposite of you. That seems to be Fox News for our side. And one of the things that we've noticed lately, and honest Frank, it's tough whenever you hear some reports that are coming out, because some a lot of these reports that you hear are definitely coming from your side, okay? In this case, they're coming from the very, very far left. And so you have a tendency to take some of that stuff with a grain of salt, especially if it's something that, you know, if you're somebody like us who kind of likes to think a little bit before we react. And one of the things we kept hearing a whole lot of, and my wife pointed it out, and she pointed out a couple of things, but one of the things that she had mentioned to me at one point was, you know, I think this the these boycotts and whatever, talking about the Laura Ingrams and whatever, the Sean Hannitys, and it started driving some of their advertisers away. Most of the time, you look at that as one of two things. It's either short term, number one, or number two, it's very specific to a particular show. In this case, we'll say Sean Hannity. Okay, advertisers are leaving. But they're not necessarily leaving Fox News as much as they're leaving that hour that Hannity's on. In other words, it's very hard for his show to gain sponsors. There was some hints that Fox News was losing sponsorship in general, overall. And I kind of, like I said, I took it with a grain of salt because, you know, the source that you're getting from, you know, I'm not one to put a whole lot of faith in one source, and I know you with your background is the same way, right? You always want to verify the information you're being told. And there really wasn't much verification on this idea that Fox News was either losing money or, as some of these folks have said, hemorrhaging money. But then a funny thing happened, and they invited oh, what's his name to do a town
Bernie Sanders.
hall? Bernie,
Bernie.
thank you. They invited Bernie to do a town hall, and he agreed. And that really kind of made a few folks on the far, far left really angry. How dare he go into an enemy territory, right? That was like the vibe that you were getting from it. And some of the more moderate lefties were saying, well, you know, if you want to convince people that, you know, to hear your message, you better give them the message and not rely on Fox's interpretation of your message, because then you'll never get them. And I think you and I a couple of weeks back had that conversation, right? And we were sort of along that same path. Since then, Kirsten Gillibrand, I believe it was, also did a town hall there. And the reaction and the response wasn't as strong as the Bernie one is, but I think that has a lot to do with where they stand in the polls too. But then an interesting thing happened. They invited Elizabeth Warren, and she flat out refused. And she almost literally verbatim reiterated what my wife has been telling me. And I want to read a couple of her tweets just to, you know, kind of put this all in perspective. She said, and this is only a day ago, all right? So it's not like we're going back very far. She said that Fox News, and this is one of her tweets, I'm reading this off of Twitter right now. Fox News is a hate-for-profit racket that gives a megaphone to racists and conspiracists. It's designed to turn us against each other, risking life and death consequences to provide cover for the corruption that's rotting our government and hollowing out our middle class. Hate for profit works only if there is a profit. So Fox News balances a mix of bigotry, racism, and outright lies with enough legit journalism to make the claim to advertisers that it's a reputable news outlet. It's all about dragging in ad money, big ad money. But Fox News is struggling as more and more advertisers pull out of their hate-filled space. A Democratic town hall, and it was a capital D, so, you know, it was the party town hall, gives the Fox News sales team a way to tell potential sponsors it's safe to buy ads on Fox. No harm to their brand or reputation. Then, parentheses, she has spoiler. It's not. And I said, holy shit, that's exactly what my wife said.
Both of them are spot on.
And so it appears to me that a lot of this noise, you know, I call it noise. When it comes from an extreme side, I call it noise, whether it's our side or the right. It seems like a lot of this noise was based in at least a little bit of truth, right? Where Fox News apparently is losing some money, and that's why you're seeing the Shepard Smith.
Yes.
Him. You're seeing him. Who's the guy that's on Sundays? The Order guy. You know, that kind of has the Fox's version of Face the Nation. In any case, I can't remember his name. So you're seeing these guys who are supposedly, you know, legitimate journalists, and you're seeing these Democratic town halls, and you're seeing, you know, the judge that you had mentioned kind of at least going a little bit more centric than maybe Fox News is likes. And now you have Elizabeth Warren just absolutely digging a hole and burying them, like, you know, burying Fox News. And I'm wondering if there's not a little bit of legitimacy and a little bit of truth to this idea that Fox is starting to lose a whole boatload of money.
I think that's a great analysis. I think it's a great connecting the dots. Listening to what your wife said, listening to what Elizabeth Warren has said, and then, you know, kind of reading the tea leaves of what's going on. I think it's a great analysis, and it's a, like I said, it's a great connection made there, Matt Patsy. I do enjoy that one. And I think also, let's connect the dots a little further. If I were to argue as a political strategist for any one candidate moving forward, whether they're a Democrat or Republican, I'd say get as much exposure as you can, right? Because the purpose is to get your name out there, to get name recognition, to get familiarity, eventually electability. So you want to have a broad appeal. If that means going on CNN and Fox News, then as your political advisor or strategist, I'm going to tell you to do that. But what Elizabeth Warren has done, it's very interesting. And this is not my rah-rah speech for Elizabeth Warren. I'm just saying, I think it's smart strategy. I've seen more and more of her going into quote-unquote Trump territory. Counties and areas that have voted overwhelmingly for Trump, she is setting up town halls of her own in those places, going and laying out her strategies, laying out her talking points for those folks to hear what her policies would be. So she's making that sales pitch to them directly. And apparently it's working. You know, she's getting a lot of support from folks who are quote unquote former Trump supporters who say they like her policies. They like what they hear from her. They could support her. So instead of taking it to the masses in one fell swoop that would ultimately benefit Fox News's bottom line, she's going out directly to the people who would be watching Fox News. And I think that's next level strategy.
Yeah. You know what? I think it's really brilliant for her on a number of fronts. First of all, it separates her from Barry Sanders and Kirsten Gillibrand and these other folks because they're willing to do it. She's saying, no, fuck you. I'm not doing it. You people are rotten to the core, yada, 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 yada. And kind of, in that same way that I had started, you know, my rant about, she is now looking at her. You look at her and Bernie Sanders in this whole Fox News thing, and you're seeing the yin and yang there, right? You're seeing somebody who's willing to accept that and somebody who's willing to reject that. So you're kind of you're seeing that balance play out a little bit even within the Democratic Party. I'll be honest. I kind of agree with you. I think that as a strategy, an individual strategy, where you're looking at you know, if my job is to get my candidate elected, that's it. That's my only job, and that's the only thing I need to focus on, which is probably everybody who's running every every well, with all of these guys, they're only looking about they're only looking at getting their person the exposure and the votes. They don't care about the party. The party's secondary, right? I got to
Right.
get my person in. That's my job, is to get you elected. It doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, or if you're a flat earther. It doesn't matter. My job is to get you elected, period. So I'm going to do everything I can to do that. If that means telling you you need to go on Fox News in their town hall meeting, then that's what I'm going to do. Ultimately, it's up to the candidate if they're willing to do that or not. But yeah, I agree with you. Idealistically, and looking at things overall on the long term, you don't want to give Fox News anything to even smokescreen legitimacy. Because we've talked about it. They are not legitimate at all. I mean, Chef Smith is a good guy, and his things are okay, but you can say that about anything. You look at MSNBC, Joe Scarborough is not a left-leaning leaning anything, but next to Maddow, he's like the highest rated show on MSNBC. He's anti-Trump, but that's just because Trump fucked him. It has nothing to do with ideals or outlook on anything, or their political views. It's just because Trump gave it to him. So
It's
this
personal. It's
idea,
very personal.
yeah, it's very personal, and you can tell whenever Mika talks about it. She's very transparent with how personal it is, and that's you can say that's good or that's bad. It doesn't really matter, but you can see, you can tell by their actions, by their body language if you watch them, that if you're listening to them, you kind of get the feeling that it's very personal to them. And if Trump didn't screw them over, they would still be. Well, at least Scarborough would still be a Republican. He's one of us now. He's one of my type. He's an independent, but he never would have changed parties. It was because of what happened to him personally. When you look
Yep.
at you look at Elizabeth Warren, and you made a good point whenever earlier, and I can't remember if we were on air or not, if we were on the pod, if we were talking before, how you have people on the right who look at her, a lot of what she's selling, especially her economics, and they kind of like what she has to say about those things. And so going into that arena is got to be really appealing to somebody with the message that she is trying to get out. And it takes a lot to put out tweets like that and be as decidedly no against Fox News whenever there is such an opportunity for an individual there. That's a tough thing to, that had to be a hard choice to make, I would think.
I think so, but I also think, as I said, and to your point earlier in our conversation during this podcast, I think it's just great strategy, and it's in the sense that maybe one or two candidates could kind of get out in front of that, and she's on the front of it, meaning that she's taken the time now, a year and a half out from the general election, to go out and meet the people directly, and to send her message that, Fox News is only purpose is to divide us, and I'm here to tell you that we're not that different. And I don't know that she'd ever get that message across consistently on Fox News. So it's next level strategy, because she's not feeding into that beast, and she's not legitimizing them. She's able to separate herself, as you said earlier, from the other candidates and kind of get out in front of that pack. Now, other people may try to do that. They may try to, and they should, honestly, but she can always say, look, I was the first one coming out here to see you all. I wanted to hear what you had to say, and I was telling you when you had questions for me, I was out here to answer those. So she's really kind of, it's always good to be first,
Oh yeah, because not everybody's playing catch up.
Yep.
To go back to some of her tweets, here's one place we can fight back. I won't ask millions of Democratic, capital D, Democratic primary voters to tune into an outlet that profits from racism and hate in order to see our candidates, especially when Fox will make even more money adding our valuable audience to their ratings numbers. So it kind of goes back to what you were saying just a second ago. I've done 57 media avails and 131 interviews, taking over 1,100 questions from the press since January. Fox News is welcome to come to my events just like any other outlet, But a Fox News town hall adds money to their hate for profit machine, to which I say hard pass. So she's not, that's not, I mean, you want to talk about no gray area? There's no gray area there with her. There is no way she's going to be on Fox News or Fox town hall, probably in either of our lifetimes.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, everything comes down to money. And we've said this before, I've said it before on our podcast, that, you know, and I know you've said it before, you know, many times in our lifetime, is you just follow the money. You follow the money and you follow the money. And money is making decisions for Fox right now. And money makes decisions for the people in Congress and the Senate who decide to get behind somebody and cover up for their crimes versus coming out and being patriotic. And, you know, another person that I follow because of that very dynamic you talked about earlier, the yin and yang, is Joe Walsh of Joe Walsh Freedom. You know, I never really appreciate his viewpoint because it's so usually so diametrically opposed to mine, as you said earlier, but I still want to see what he's saying. I want to hear what he's saying.
Right.
And for the last 2 or 3 months, he's actually been, almost every tweet he sends out is anti-Trump, is anti-Congress, that the congressional area that is obstructing for Trump, meaning he goes after Mitch McConnell, he goes after Lindsey Graham, and he's going after Trump almost daily. He's talking about it's time to be a patriot. It's time to, you know, stop denying that he obstructed justice and do something about it. He's ashamed of our country. He said this, you know, specifically in his tweets. And you know, I only imagine, I don't listen to his radio show if he has one. I apologize. I'm not trying to take a dig at him for that. I'm just saying the only forum I am able to follow him on is Twitter. But, you know, that's somebody who doesn't necessarily, maybe he's getting eyes from the Twitterverse. But, you know, he served in Congress as a Republican. He's been, you know, a pro-Trump and pro-Republican GOP rah-rah guy for a long time until very recently. So, you know, the money has got to be motivating Fox. But there are other folks out there who are calling for, you know, America and its political leaders to wake up.
Yeah. And you know, the other one, Bill Kristol, right?
Yep.
The only time I've ever saw Bill Kristol on MSNBC was whenever he was the opposition voice, right? Whenever he was the, whenever they were trying to have some sort of, I don't want to say combative because that sounds very hostile. That's not what I mean. But you have opposing viewpoints, right? And he was the conservative. He was the right winger. The Republican. And now you look at him now on MSNBC, and he's on almost everybody's show. And he's welcome. He's a welcome guest. He's not like the opposing view that's on for 10 minutes where he just pisses you off and then they go to commercial, right? He's on for, you know, 30, 40 minutes. And Michael Steele is the same way, right? The former RNC chairman. Same way. Whenever he was first started on MSNBC, he was the opposition view. Now it's like all these folks are in lockstep.
Yeah.
They're not, yeah, they're not the opposition anymore. They're just like the nice Republican. Right?
Right.
they're the guy that we agree on like 90% on, or you know, we agree that we want to do this. We just sort of disagree about how we're going to get there. Let me ask you, in your opinion, you and I both know a lot of right wing, I shouldn't say right wing, let's say conservative, because right wing is getting a bad rap. A lot of conservative people, hell, you know, our hometown is nothing but conservative people, right? We are the black sheeps. Before Trump and after Trump, compare and contrast, how many of these conservative people, because like I said, I don't want to say right wing because it's taking on a whole new meaning. Could you sit down and have a conversation with and just share viewpoints before Trump and how that conversation went, and now, you know, post Trump or during Trump, that can you even talk to these people anymore? And if you can, what's that conversation like? Because I bet you anything we're going to be reflections of each other.
Possibly. You know, one thing I did was I limited my contact with people who are very, very pro-Trump, because I just knew that my mouth would probably get us into an argument, and you know, I didn't necessarily want to spend my time doing that. But the folks that I can't necessarily pull that strategy with, we usually avoid the topic at this point, because I think we all know that, you know, we're on opposite sides of the spectrum in that regard. So we usually just don't talk about politics or Trump in particular. But you know, there's two or three folks that I would think come to mind, maybe four folks that come to mind when you pose this question to me. And you know, when we do talk about politics or we talk about Trump, I find that I've been, you know, pre-Trump, they held the same kind of beliefs that they hold now. They're just amplified a little bit more. So I would have the same kind of discussions with them pre-Trump. But I mean, less likely that we would talk politics pre-Trump, you know. And then afterwards, there was that inflamed period of time, maybe like, you know, 6 months to a year where the topic would come up, we would debate it, blah, blah, blah. It would become heated at times. But now we either avoid the topic or we're willing to both concede some things to just kind of, I think, move things along. Because these are people I'm not going to cut out of my life, and I can't avoid talking about it entirely. So I think we've learned to adapt to how we talk about it.
You know, it's funny. For the most part, the folks that I hold in high regard, let's put it that way, okay, folks who mean a great deal to me, who I'm going to love regardless of their political views. They know me, and they, you know, they really, if they didn't know my leanings, my political views before, you know, we started these podcasts and the YouTube channel, they sure as hell do now, right? And even then, most of us made a very strong point of avoiding politics altogether, other than saying, you know, so and so is an asshole, so and so is an asshole, because, you know, that's kind of that's the Newcastle way of doing things, right? That's how we do it. I find myself spending less time with those folks since Trump, and I whenever I am around them, we all very consciously do our best to avoid the subject. And luckily, there's a whole lot other things, so many more things that we have in common that we can talk about, so many other subjects that we can discuss where this jackass isn't really a subject that we need to get into. We can spend hours just visiting each other and having a good time and never having to bring this stuff up. And I guess that's a good thing, and in a way it's not, because it seems like everybody retreated to their corners, right? And it's very difficult to find middle ground anymore. Even whenever, you know, before Trump, we had 95% middle ground, right? We
Right.
did, and we never had conversations before him about what should happen or what we should do or if it should even be a subject. Our arguments and our discussions weren't about the subject. It was a matter about how do we achieve it. You know, and I'll make the argument a lot to kind of put it in perspective. I say, you know, we're a football team, an American football team, and we all want to score a touchdown because we all need this touchdown to win the game. The difference between the conservatives and the liberals before Trump was, are we a running team or are we a passing team? Right? That was it. We all want to score the touchdown. We just argued about, or we didn't agree about how we were going to score, but we all had a goal. We all knew we had to score. Now, half of us don't even know what the fuck a touchdown is. We just know we want to do option A because you want to do option B. And you and I both know eventually this is going to come to a head. This is going to come to a head. In either, well, it's going to come to a head in a very dramatic way. And it might be as simplistic as an election in 18 months or so, or it might get crazy. And honestly, I don't think it's going to get crazy. I don't think you're gonna have people out in the streets. But I think that you're seeing with Trump, you're seeing the backlash of it was one thing to have a black guy in office. It's another thing to have a woman in office. We just can't do both back to back. We're not ready for that. So we're going to pick Trump. To a lot of people saying, yeah, we probably shouldn't have done that, although they'll never admit it. And I think you're going to see a big change come this election. I really, really do.
And I think that's why you're not going to see craziness in the streets, because there are a lot of people that are waking up from this kind of hangover, this silliness that went on, and they're saying this is embarrassing to our country. Whether you voted for Trump or not, they might not come out and say I was wrong, but they are going to turn around and remedy their wrong with that. They're going to quietly do that. And I think that you're seeing that. I'll tell you, one of the folks that I talked to that I was mentioning that you said, how do the conversations go? Without kind of pointing the finger, I was mentioning, look, if everybody agrees that the Russians were trying to, and in fact did influence our elections, they're interfering in our elections, and that's something we can't stand for. There was an attack on us, a cyber attack on us, a strategy campaign, and they want to divide and conquer us. That's what their whole goal is. And just what you described for the last 10 minutes or 5 minutes or so is that strategy in action. We all go to our own separate corners. We start to have this grudge against each other. We're looking at each other sideways. We're avoiding the topic. And when we do talk about it, we argue about it. That's how divided America is, and worse. There's a widening around, immigration, around brown skin and white skin, around rich and poor, around Democrat and Republican, around religions. And they just want to keep dividing us till they conquer us. But the bottom line is, I think enough people are starting to feel that, wait a minute, wait a minute. Let's really examine what happened. The Russians interfered in our election. They want to control us. Who is their direct route of control? It's not Congress. It's not, your local Democrat in the governorship, in the state of Rhode Island. It's the president of the United States. That's their one way to control our country. At this point, and through trying to interfere in our elections, and with the Facebook posts and the posts on, any forum that they can use their troll army to post on, Twitter, et cetera, they continue to have us divided over things. But people are starting to realize that. People are starting to see that and say, wait a minute, if this is the case, then we don't know for sure what they're going to try to divide us with in the future. They may try to divide us with a different candidate that we don't really like the policies of, And so if that's the case, we need to fight against that and unite against that. And that's a rallying point, I think, to try to reunite the country, is it doesn't matter what the candidate's name is. All they're trying to do is get somebody in there that's going to divide us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the ways that they try to do this, and it's going to turn around and go right back to where we started with this whole thing, is this mouthpiece that this extreme thing is Fox News, right? They are the mouthpiece. They are the mouthpiece that is doing this whole thing and making life very easy for Trump, right? As far as keeping his base and his Republican supporters together. They're basically a mouthpiece. They're basically state-run media, and now they're trying to legitimize what they're doing and make money, because they got to be hemorrhaging money. It's a shame. It's a shame that it's come to this. It really is, and it's a shame that you have so many people who just will not call them out on it. And I think that's probably the one thing that the left does that's a little different than the right is the left doesn't have a problem calling everybody out on anything. Hell, we have 22 people running for president right now on the Democratic ticket, and they're already trying to run some sort of purity test on all of them. They haven't even had a debate yet, and the left's already trying to run a purity test on these guys. So, it's funny again, you're seeing the yin and the yang, the difference between the left and the right, where the right is just like, okay, we're just going to fall in line, and the left is going to be like, well, you're not pure enough, or you're not good enough. It's that old saying, right? The right falls in line, the left waits to fall in love.
Right.
I'm curious as to if you think, let's assume that the Democrats eventually pick an old white guy, be it Sanders or Joe Biden. Pick either one. It really doesn't matter which one, because I'm being very superficial here. Do you think that the same people who elected the AOCs of the world to Congress are going to be supportive of Biden or Bernie?
It's really hard to tell. I think there'd be a lukewarm response. You're not going to have those passionate people running out there to support and do a lot of work for. I don't think, as a general rule, either one of those two. They have their supporters. Don't get me wrong, they have their supporters. And I think that the false narrative or the false balance them is. And you may have alluded to this with Bernie in the past, Master Patsy, and that is he has his base of supporters, but I don't see it growing. And I think that's the case. There's a very passionate core of supporters that like Bernie, and there's a passionate core of supporters that like Joe Biden. I would say Biden has a bigger chance of growing his base as opposed to Bernie, but I don't see it growing too big because there's a lot of people who want to see something new, a new infusion of blood into this situation. And neither of those guys represent that newness. So,
And do you think that is a result of Trump? This idea of them wanting the newness, they wanted the young people, they want well, Beto's not doing very well, so he's a bad choice, but the Pete Buttigieg's of the world, do you think that is where a lot of these people are leaning, just because he kind of checks off a couple of check marks, right? He's young, and he's a minority, but he's not a minority. He's a minority in the fact that he's gay and he's openly gay, but he's not a minority because he's a white guy. He's just a
right.
young white guy. Or, you got the Kamala Harris's of the world, who was a female and is of mixed race. So there's definitely the minority factor there, but she was a prosecutor. So, she was the popo. She was the person who was putting people in jail. So you kind of have, again, we go back to this yin and yang thing again, right? Do you think that those two, or that type is what I should say, it is the person that most of the Democrats are going to rally around? Or do you think that it's going to be the Joe Biden slash Bernie Sanders of the world that they're going to rally around? Because Bernie has all the college guys. Right, he's got all the college age white male in his pocket. He did 4 years ago. He still does now. Joe Biden has the people who are reminiscing about the good old days that were, the Obama days, like they were so far away, even though they feel like they were a lifetime away. Do you think it's really gonna? Do you think that? Let's say we have a ticket. Here's your ticket, okay? Here's your ticket. Is Joe Biden running for president with Bernie as his VP? And you can switch that around if you'd like. If you want to make an argument, switch that around to prove your case better, by all means do it. And your other ticket, the opposite side of that, being Kamala Harris as your president and Pete Buttigieg as your VP. And if you want to switch those two around, go right ahead. I had to pick two, so I just did them in that order. Which do you think is going to get more support? Is really going to get the support and the enthusiasm behind him to get him over the edge and beat Trump?
Wow. I
Yeah,
honestly think
I know. I gave it to you, brother. I'm sorry I did, but what do you think?
that, well, I think that I won't go into detail about this hypothetical, but I would say switching across, like having Biden and Kamala Harris on the same ticket would probably be the best of all worlds
I
in
agree
terms
with
of
I completely agree with that. Yes.
however you order that, but I don't know that, Biden would agree to to be vice president again, but you know, that's something that you'd have to look at. So I think that, you know, with that said, with the limitations you put on it, boy, oh boy, I think that the one that would play all the way across the country in all pockets, and I know it's going to pain me to say this, and it may pain you to hear it, is Biden Bernie, because you're going to have folks in certain pockets of the country that are just repulsed by a woman being president. They weren't ready for it 4 years ago. They're not ready for it now. That are repulsed by an openly gay politician, and they don't want that being, you know, flouted around to their kids in the national office. So, you know,
Well, let me ask you this. I hate to interrupt you, but let me ask you this. Of those two, which one do you think is the quote unquote the worst one? The female or the gay guy?
to the
It's
people that
tough,
are
isn't it? Yeah.
to the people that are annoyed by such things, and putting them on the meter, hate to generalize, but I would say that right now, because of the anti-woman, you know, backlash, I'll tell you this. I see it in people's comments to a Marvel movie. You know, people get so irritated that Marvel put women heroes in their movie and made a point out of it, that they seek out to put comments in sections of, you know, after an article about a Marvel movie. They say they stopped watching Marvel movies because of that. So, you know, I just see a very viral anti-woman power movement. So I would say because of that, it's the woman, I think.
You know what? I'll be honest. I tend to agree with you. And I told my wife whenever Obama got elected for his second term, and it was such a devastatingly one-sided victory. I think they were calling it at like 10 o'clock Eastern time, right? It was that. It wasn't like, okay, he has a chance of winning. It was like the polls closed at 9 o'clock Eastern time. At 10 o'clock, they're like, yeah, this thing's over, right? He already got all the delegates he needed. I immediately looked at my wife as soon as he won, and I said, "Sweetie, I hate to put a damper on this whole thing, but in 4 years, we're going to find out if this country is more sexist or racist."
Yeah, you called it.
I swear to God, I folks, you guys might not know my wife, but Frank does. And next time we go to lunch, you can ask her, and she'll tell you flat out, no, that's literally what he told me whenever they announced Obama won his second term. And there was no doubt he was going to win. But as soon as that happened, as soon as it was made official, I looked at her and I said, "I'm very happy. In 4 years, we're going to find out how this country really leans." And it was frightening that came into fruition, right? It really is. It's frightening that happened.
And I'll point out one thing real quick before you go on. And even with that, because of the pockets of hate towards women, it was enough to, you know, stem the election and whatever other shenanigans went on. But as you've said at various times throughout our podcast in the past, Hillary still got the most votes of anybody, any presidential candidate in the history of our country. So even though that exists, she was that strong of a candidate.
Yeah, she really was. How would you like to do that? How would you like to be the one person in the world that got more votes than anybody in the history of the world and still lost?
Yeah,
Right?
that's
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 got to
got
be tough. I don't care. I mean, she puts up a good front, but that's got to eat at her every freaking day. It has to. Speaking of our country being more sexist than racist, I really hate to say it. Let's talk about Alabama here for a minute, can we?
great segue. Did tie that in together
Isn't
perfect.
that good? You know what? I've been hanging around with Master Grant enough to start figuring out how to do these segues. Alabama's legislature passed a law that criminalizes abortion, basically. It basically criminalizes abortion in every form, and they even this thing even covers incest and rape. It also goes after women who cross state lines to get an abortion. They can still be prosecuted. I have so many problems with this, Frank. I don't even know where to start. I guess I'll start at the end and try to work my way backwards. It appeared to me whenever this legislation was passed, and as far as I know, this moment and at the beginning of this recording, the governor has not signed it yet, as far as I know. I haven't found anything to say any different. But is it me, or did these folks just decide that women are now property of the state?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, if there are any folks that listen to this that are, among the crowd that think that these women's rights groups and folks like myself and Master Patsy who tout women's rights are swinging too far to some side, you just need to look at this and then and ask yourself one question. What happens to the man that takes his girlfriend, mistress, wife, to a clinic? Or, asks her to go to a clinic to take to have an abortion because he impregnated her. Nothing under that law. Nothing. There is no punishment for a man. So here we are, 2019, and that's the kind of law that's written. That's one minor, very minor, but very major aspect of this that shows you that this is a sexist law that's saying we control women. We don't control men, we control women. We control women's reproductive rights. So,
The thing that got me most of all about this, Frank, was that you had a whole bunch of men who decided that they were going to pass this law. And I understand the governor's female, but how do you look at somebody? And I've said this. And I'm gonna get pretty ignorant here a little bit. I don't mean that like verbally, but I mean that as far as outlook is concerned. How do you look at somebody who, despite all of your bullshit, is gonna stand behind you or beside you, is gonna figure out a way to make sure you have a nice house, that your clothes are washed, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm saying that specifically because that is the traditional, quote unquote, traditional woman's point of view. I'll be honest with you, Mike. As we're doing this podcast, I got a couple loads of clothes in the washing machine. I'm getting ready to make dinner, and I still have two classes I have to teach later tonight. And that's simply because my wife is out working, right? But how do you look at somebody who's willing to take that role for you and to support you and to put up with all of your shit and sit there and say, you know what? I still control you.
Right.
I still want to be able to control you.
Well,
How the fuck do you do that?
it's so insidious in our country that I would ask people that don't think that that there's sexist policies and sexism to just sit back and think about, just insert man for every time something passes like this. The Georgia one, the Alabama one. There's an 11-year-old girl in Ohio right now that's a rape victim that's pregnant. And it's on national news. If she lived in Georgia and in Alabama, under the Alabama proposed law, she would not be able to end that pregnancy. She would not be able to do that at 11 years old as a rape victim. They would be requiring her to carry that baby to full term. So let's just ask, if that was a man, would they be required to do that? Now, I know that physiologically we can't, but let me ask you this. Have they said anything about a man having to support the woman if he got her pregnant? Obviously, there's a man that got her pregnant. So from the moment of conception, he should be supporting the woman because now she shouldn't be subject to anything that's going to harm that baby. So the man's got to start supporting her, right? Child support should start then. Spousal support or companion support, or whatever you're going to call it. Let's have a man be required to do that. Now, if you start looking at it from that standpoint, how does that make people feel?
Well, I'll do you one better. I mean, this ban would throw doctors in jail for up to almost 100 years for just doing their jobs. So it kind of all goes back to what you were saying, right? It all goes back to this what you were saying. How it put a man in that position. You know, you're absolutely right. If you put a man in that position, all of a sudden, this dynamic changes. This rhetoric changes, right? This whole narrative goes away. It all goes away. And I'll tell you one better, Frank. I don't think that it's an anti-woman thing is because as much as it is that the folks who do this are scared of women. I think that they're afraid of women, period. I really do.
You know, there's a lot of political power that is untapped, that is becoming tapped right now. And that's just like, you know, with the with folks that are brown skin and immigrants and et cetera, darker skin folks, the people that have been controlling the power structure in our country realize that a lot of what they've done has been negatively impacting folks that are not in control. And they're afraid that when those folks do get some modicum of control, and it really it's just like, okay, if you're the number one sales people in the world in athletic shoes, you're not going to keep going up from number one. You only can come down. So you're worried about your competitors. You're worried about them coming in and taking some of your share away. Well, that's the same thing right now. The people that have been in control in this country, they can either maintain control or lose a little bit of control along the way. And that's what they fear, because when those other folks get control, they're afraid, wow, they might mistreat us the way we mistreated them, which is why, you know, it's really indicative of the fact that there is racism, structural racism. There is structural sexism. It's insidious. It's in everything. It might not be, you know, people aren't doing it with an intent to harm somebody else, but it's just built in. It's baked in. Some people do it with an intent to harm. Some people just go about their daily lives and don't realize this is what's already existing. It's the structure that we live in. And that's why it's so hard when people are trying to combat this. And it feels like to folks that don't face it on a daily basis, that's all you ever make something about. That's because it's baked into our system and we have to root it out at every level.
Well, here's my other question for you. If we're going to do this from a very with no heart, in this bill, did anybody say anything about lowering the cost of adoption or providing health and mental health care to women and young girls who are being forced to carry these children that they either can't handle, have no way of supporting, or remind them of the guy that just raped them? What about foster care? Will that improve? It doesn't tackle and and that's just right off the top of my head, Frank. I swear to God, this is just me thinking whenever you were speaking. It does nothing to address it does nothing to address any of these things. Nothing. It literally ignores the fact that this person now has to spend their entire life in a situation that they didn't have any choice in doing or in living. It's one thing, you know, we could have our beliefs, okay? And you and I can have our beliefs. And, you know, do I want to see abortions end? Sure, I do. Do I want to wake up tomorrow morning knowing that there's never going to be another abortion in the history of the world? Sure, I do. Absolutely, I do. That doesn't mean that everybody who wakes up the next day who's pregnant says, or, you know, people on the other side or people who have that same viewpoint will sit there and say, boy, I can't wait to wake up in the morning because all I want to do is go kill babies. Right?
Right.
It just means that, look, there are times, do you want a 12 or 13 year old girl to be forced to carry a baby to term and spend the rest of her life caring for a child that is the result of her father fucking her?
No. And you know, this is the thing that's so galling is that, and even without that extreme, let's just say, do the folks who are pushing this quote unquote pro-life agenda, because I think everybody's pro-life. Everybody
I
in
agree.
some
I
way
completely agree with that. Yes.
is
I
pro-life.
completely agree with that.
It's just how you define your pro-life. Now, some folks care about people once they're born, and they want to make sure that those folks at any age or stage of their life are not abandoned by our society. That we take care of our own. And that if that means that you were born under a different flag, because that just happened to be where you were born, you didn't have a choice in that matter. But you want to make a better life in our country or in another country, that we as fellow human beings, period, human beings, should be helping each other. Or do you just say, no, we make sure that women carry every baby to term, whether they're 11 years old, whether they're 60 years old, whether they're healthy and, you know, whatever. And whether that baby was conceived under normal circumstances, without criminal intent, you all have to carry those babies to term. But once the term is over, we don't care about them anymore. Then it's up to them. Self-determination, baby. Self-determination. You go make something for yourself, little baby. You know, no matter what situation you're born into, it's all on you.
I'm going to tell you a story, and I'm going to tell everybody a story. This is a very personal story. Okay. My wife is the middle child, the middle of three. Okay. She has an older brother, a younger sister. Whenever her parents found out that her youngest sister was going to be born handicapped, she can't walk. She doesn't have any arms. She literally has no arms. She just has little hands sticking out from her shoulders. My wife's parents had to make a very difficult choice, and that was to either keep the child or to abort it. To their credit, they decided to keep the child. And to this day, every Sunday, her and I get together and we watch a Pirates game every Sunday afternoon. And we've done this for I can't tell you how many years. As long as my wife and I have been married. To say that that is a difficult choice, knowing that she's 43, 44 years old, something like that now. Knowing, Frank, we're what? 51, 52 years old. How would you like to have known back when you were 20 that this child that you're going to bring into this world is going to rely on you literally for the rest of your life? Okay, you're never going to get the chance to retire and have their kid, have your watch your kids grow and go on their way and make lives for themselves and enjoy, everything that goes along with that. Right? Whether it be grandkids or not, just watching your kids grow and, earn their wings and fly away, that type thing. Knowing that until the day you die, you have a person that is going to totally and completely rely upon you.
And that after you die, you're worried about who they are going to rely upon.
Right? Now, who's left whenever you die? Right. And my in-laws are in their 70s, right? Just like our parents are, because, Lisa's, my wife's 52, or I'm sorry, 53. I'm 51. And like I said, she's the middle child. I can honestly see a situation, and I'll be half tempted to tell you that I would think most people would say, you know what? This child is doomed. I can honestly see people say, I don't have it within me to care for this child for the rest of my life. Because I'm telling you, at 70 plus years old, at this point, they're struggling, right? I'm not talking like, financially or whatever. I just mean like physically, right? Your body breaks down. You don't have the ability to do the things that you're able to do even 5 years ago. But yet they still have a 40 whatever year old daughter that they have to take care of. I can see people choosing not to keep that child. And I don't think that that is asking a whole lot of somebody to make that choice. Like I said, to their credit, even 40 some odd years ago, almost 50 years ago, they knew that this is what they had to face, and they chose to do it anyhow. And that says a lot about their character. I don't think there's a whole lot of people that I know or that are listening that would be willing to make that same decision. And I seriously doubt that the generations behind us, and don't forget they're a generation ahead of us, would have it in them to make that decision to keep that child. How do you look at this woman? And she's married, they already have two healthy, vibrant kids. Okay, they already do. This third one is the result of the father being exposed to Agent Orange, and the fact that he hit two out of three and they're fine. This third one all of a sudden is a problem, and it wasn't his fault, it wasn't the mother's fault. Nobody's to blame for this. I'm not saying, well, you shouldn't have done this or you shouldn't have acted this way. This guy went defending our country. And how does he get paid back? Well, two out of three kids are fine, but the third one is confined to a wheelchair and doesn't have any arms.
It would take, a serious couple, intestinal fortitude between both husband and wife to be able to make that decision the way they did, and to stay together and survive it as a married couple, and to, but it takes a lot of faith, and faith in something greater than yourself to be able to do that. But if folks that even do have faith pray about it and think about it and meditate on it or whatever their faith is, and they make a very personal decision to them, it's one that's, I would never want to be thrust into that situation. I wouldn't wish it upon anybody. And,
No.
but whatever decision that those people make, it should not be criminalized. It should not be criminalized. We should encourage folks through processes that make things like that easier,
But he
that make things, raising a child that has physical handicaps and things like that easier, but we shouldn't be forcing folks to make the one decision or another.
and that's my ultimate question. Would you not want that to be your choice? As opposed to the state telling you you don't have a choice.
And that could go either way, right? The state
Right.
in Hitler's days could come along and say, "No, you're not having that child." And you might say, "I want this child. This is a burden that God placed on me, and I'm willing to accept it." But the state may say, "No, we're moving towards a perfect society, and a perfect society doesn't have these types of children."
Right, exactly. But at the end of the day, regardless, there's that yin and yang again, right? Regardless of how you look at this, it still should, it's still, and thank God, we're not the extreme that we are now. We're definitely not in fucking Alabama.
Right.
Luckily, my in-laws had the ability to make that choice.
That's
They
right.
really did. What happens to this child and the resentment that goes along with it if my in-laws weren't given the choice? They didn't have the ability to make the choice. It was already decided for them. What happens to how they look at this child now? I mean, does that not have something to do with it? Does that not play into this equation?
Your wife's in the psychology field, very well that that would have an impact
Well,
from,
sure, yeah.
one
Of
through
course
one
I
till
do.
the end of time. And the fact of the matter is, and that's why you posed the question. And the fact of the matter is, that again, it comes back to folks who are voting on these things, they don't care about that. They only care about the immediate gratification of saying we passed this particular law. And to that point, I want to go back to one thing about money. The ACLU in Alabama tweeted out a picture of a check, an actual check, of $1.7 million that the state of Alabama had to pay them to fight the state of Alabama on an unconstitutional law that they tried to pass, similar to this one in the past. So what the state legislature in Alabama is doing is willingly risking the funds of people in Alabama on something they know to be unconstitutional right now. They're pushing the issue because they want to play politics. That's all. They just pure and simple want to play politics.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. And you know, Frank, like most people, sometimes you get along with your in-laws, sometimes you don't. But I will always look at them and see that choice that they made. And I would say, you know, and I've told my wife this on numerous occasions. Thank God, you know, we never had to make that choice. And I'll be honest, I don't know how I would feel if that is something we had to decide upon. I mean, ultimately, it would have been my wife's decision. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, you know, I'm not discounting any of that. But
no,
I don't know. I don't know if I'd have been, you know, I really don't know how I would feel if I had to do that, knowing that I already have two. I have a boy and a girl. I already have two healthy, and I hit the, you know, let's face it. This third one's a blessing. Honestly, it is. I mean, you and I are both Catholic. We both know, you know, that's a blessing from God. But I don't know if that's a burden that I would be willing to shoulder. I mean, if my wife decided to keep the child, then yeah, okay, we're keeping the child and we're going to do our best. But I'll be honest, Frank, that's a decision that should not be made by anybody other than, you know, me and my wife, you know, or you and your wife, or whoever the case may be. That is not something that should be mandated or dictated by any kind of government at all. It should not be.
And I think that the polling numbers and the response that people get from asking that question to posing the question to people is people overwhelmingly want choice to be in the hands of the people that are directly affected, not by the government. And it's amazing because the Republican Party has always been the party of quote unquote, you know, allowing people to decide, right? Less government,
yeah, small government, right? Yep.
Yeah, small government, less government interference, less government involvement. But here they're the exact opposite of that. So, you know, I don't have a good segue to this, but I want to say, I know we're running out of time, and I wanted to just point something out because I want to take it back to where we started with a little bit. I think that watch Fox News, not plugging for them, but watch the stories that they start to promote over the next couple of weeks to get an idea of where they're actually standing with this support of being more reasonable. Are they really going to do that, or are they going to continue to be a mouthpiece for the state, the government, i.e. Trump? And really what I want people to watch out for is how do they start fitting the narrative around a conflict in Iran that's brewing? Because real quickly, you know, we as a government through Trump have abandoned the nuclear treaty that was in place with Iran, and it's destabilized the Iranian economy. And what now you're seeing is there's going to be some radicalization of people in Iran because they're suffering, and their leadership knows that they're directly in the crosshairs. And the sad thing is they were complying with the treaty and everything was going well, and other governments were buying oil from Iran and it was keeping things stabilized, and a happy people and a stable country is not going to be a threat to the world. And that was a good thing. But unfortunately, we've destabilized that. And now what Trump is doing is talking about sending 120,000 troops to be ready for combat with Iran. So I'm just wanting to watch that space, so to speak, to see how this all evolves and how the narrative is spun. Because if you think about it right now, we're in a wag the dog situation where Trump has to get attention off himself, has to get attention off Barr, has to get attention off the economy, which is failing. If you look at Wall Street right now, and you look at home sales right now, there's some really startling, stark indicators that there's some negatives there. And while I don't think that should be the only measure, it's the only measure that Trump and his supporters have pointed to say, look at us, we're doing great. So they're losing on all those fronts. So what's next? Let's wag the dog. Let's cause a distraction. So just be careful as you see how this all evolves. Where does the narrative go from here around Iran?
Frank, that's spot on. That's spot on. And I really do wish we had time to start talking about that. And I understand, we've definitely gone over time. I mean, we're at almost 70 minutes now. And it was one of those things that is just something that really kind of hits home, right? It's one thing whenever you're talking about some of these decisions and it's kind of like out there someplace, but this is something that kind of hits home to everybody, even everybody listening, and you and I. So hopefully next week you and I can talk about Iran, and we can't we w with anything other than we can address it in any way except holy fuck, what happened? We're so screwed, right? Hopefully we don't get to that point, but with these clowns, you never know. Hopefully we hit on that, or with the way these guys are going, Iran's going to be second or third or fourth on the list, and something new is going to pop up because these guys are just unbelievable. They're just really, really unbelievable. But we'll approach that next week, and we'll take it as it falls in our lap. Until then, I want to thank. I think we should probably wrap it up. Is there anything you want to end this up with, Frank, before we call it a day?
I'm going to just call today and leave it up to you, Master Patsy. Thank you again for doing this. I love it, our talks every week, and thanks for everybody for listening.
Yeah, thank everybody for listening. As I say every Wednesday and every Sunday, your time is very, very, very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of this time with your time with us means a great deal to us. It truly, truly does. You really have no idea how much we talk about it, especially off air. How many people have downloaded our pod, how many people have viewed our YouTube channel. It really means a lot to us. So we thank you ahead of time, and your time is really means a lot to us. So until next week, as we used to say back in the day, whenever we were kids, whenever Frank and I were kids, same bat time, same bat channel. If you don't know what that means, I'm sorry, you're far too young. God bless you too. Until then, folks, to wrap this up, we will say thank you, goodbye, and God bless. Thank you very, very much. Goodbye.
Butchered Sports. Raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Lessons from the Dojang with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show and want to know more, check out dojanglelessons.com and please leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Join us again next week when we discuss whatever the hell's been going on.